Oh, what's up, everyone? You're listening to the Budgets and Brews podcast with your host, Rich and Tony, where we discuss, chat, and ramble about personal finance, investing, getting out of debt, budgets, business, and beer. This week's topic is Budgeting 101, Creating a Budget. In this episode, we interview budget coach Bobby Olson and discuss budgeting myths, creating a budget from scratch, and go into detail on the five-step budgeting process. At the end of the episode, join us for Rich and Tony's Beer Review, where we act like beer connoisseurs, but in reality have no idea what we're talking about. Today on tap, Dos Equis Double X Lager is special. All right, welcome, Bobby. Thank you for joining us. We're happy to have you on the show today. How's it going?
Oh, thanks for having me. It's a great day, and I'm so excited to be with you guys and talk budgets and brews at the same time. That's awesome.
Yes, my two favorite B words right there. So can you provide some listeners with a brief background of your experience and anything you want to share to help us get to know you better? I have on here that you are a budget coach and that you used to produce a financial radio show that focused on managing million-dollar portfolios, and since then you transferred into hosting your own Sensible Chat podcast.
Yeah, you know, when I was producing that show, I was booking all of these different, investing people, but also personal finance people for interviews and everything, and always believing that they were just, these strategies were only for rich people, couldn't work for me. So I really hated personal finance. I hated investing. I hated hearing about all of it. And so I would just tune it out. But I booked Ellie Kay for an interview for her book, The 60-Minute Money Workout. So her book was sitting on my shelf after that, probably for a couple of years. And I was deep in debt. I'd had a failed business. And so I was trying to get out from under that debt and just feeling like I wasn't getting anywhere. It was never going to happen. I was desperate. And I kept looking at her book, and finally it was screaming at me, open it up. And I thought, there's no way this is going to work for me. So I'm going to prove that it can't work, and I'm just going to read the book. And so I actually started reading the book, and I got so excited. She was talking about the debt snowball in the book, and I thought, there's no way that it can be that easy. No way. So I threw down her book. I ran down the hall and started crunching the numbers, and I was just ecstatic to find out, wow. I mean, I was trying to prove her wrong, and I couldn't do it. And after that, it was off to the races. I wanted to learn everything I could. I put together a plan and I got out of debt, and I just started wanting to scream it from the rooftops because I thought, if this can work for me, this can work for anybody. You guys need to know about this. This is so easy.
And that's awesome. And I'm sure along that way, while you're reading that, and like you said, you're trying to like disprove that as almost like a challenge to yourself. But I'm sure that there's a bunch of different myths or maybe some things that you thought were realities. And then once you started getting deeper in there, you're able to sort of uncover those. And a couple of them that we have on here, I was going to see if you could talk about, is myth number one. So we're going to talk about the five budgeting myths. Is budgeting is hard?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I guess there was a time when I believed that, but you know, budgeting is so easy. Once I got into it, I discovered that it was really just simple math. The hard part is changing your mindset. But I was so sick of my money controlling me and not having any options that it was actually easy because I found a path where I could change my reality. And that was super exciting to me. So doing the math was no problem.
I can kind of relate to that a little bit. I remember, you know, when I first started getting into taking my finances seriously and really breaking down like my spending, I used to always see like everyone's like, you know, use spreadsheets or do this or do that. And I'm like, you know, I'm not really like a super smart guy. I don't know if I can handle like making spreadsheets and if I can track things correctly. But you know, with a lot of the tools that are out there nowadays, and even when we had Jay Money on, you know, he has these pre-made Excel sheets or spreadsheets you can use where you really just have to enter in the numbers of your spending. And once you get that kind of down, everything becomes very clear and very easy to track.
Yeah, you know, I hate spreadsheets. They're very intimidating, but you're right. I mean, it's just a bunch of numbers that you have to plug in. And I, a lot of times, give people just a clean sheet that is on Excel, so it still has the formula. It'll still do the math for you, but it's not intimidating. It just looks like a sheet of paper, because you're right. I mean, that's all that's intimidated is all these boxes, but forget about that. Just plug in the numbers.
I think it's once you find out whatever works for you, then you're golden. And until then, whether it's an app or a spreadsheet or if you're pencil and paper, whatever that is that works for you, like then you're able to go ahead and fully dedicate to the, to creating your budget.
Yeah, definitely. I started out with pen and paper and it worked just fine for me, except, you know, it took a long time because I kept having to use my calculator and starting from scratch. So eventually I transitioned, but yeah, I mean, you can do it, whatever works for you. Yeah, just do it. I mean, pen and paper is just as good as anything else.
And now let's move to myth number two. So budgeting is restrictive. I hear this a lot and people think, oh no, it's going to, you know, control my whole life. Like this budget, I have to live by it. Is that a truth or is that a myth?
No, it's a myth. And I hear this one all the time and it just makes me want to rip my hair out every time I hear it. Because for me, at least, I mean, budgeting is freeing. If you, I mean, you're creating your budget. So if it's restrictive, then you need to lighten up on yourself. You know, a good budget is simply there to help you plan and execute the use of your money for the things that you really want, instead of just going out mindlessly spending and then finding out after the fact, oh, I really didn't realize that I was spending my money on this stuff. So to me, budgeting is freeing because it gives you the power. And so if you're feeling restricted by your budget, it's time to make some changes and put some slack in there.
When I created my budget, I had a, it was a section in there. It was like my miscellaneous. I could spend it on whatever I want. Yeah. This was like my free money to spend. And whether it was $200 or $300, what I would do is I would wait till the end of the month. And that way I knew next month I would have another $300 in there, but I felt like I could just go and just spend that money. And I was like, wow, what can I spend it on today? And I would purposely try to get myself to spend it. And it was just so fun for me like during that time.
Yeah, it can be really exciting because then you can do it without any guilt and any stress about whether it's going to screw up anything else. That's the best part.
Mm-hmm. And talking about, you know, budgeting being restrictive, so one of the excuses I think I heard maybe my younger brother used once is, you know, I don't have time to budget, you know, and I'm like, I'm like, hey, Joe, you know, my brother's name is Joe. I'm like, Joe, you got to make the time, you know, even if you're just spending 20 minutes a week or something, just writing down your expenses, or if you start using one of these apps or something like that, it doesn't need to be a super time consuming thing. You know, just, you know, make it like a weekly habit just to check your budget, or maybe even a monthly habit to make sure you're staying on track, and it can really help people financially.
Yeah, you know, it's like anything else. If you procrastinate and put it off, it's going to be a bigger job. But if you do it little by little, it takes you 30 seconds and you're done. I mean, I do it after every transaction, typically, because I have an app on my phone. I can just enter it in after I'm at the store. 30 seconds, I'm done. So,
myth number three, budgeting is boring.
Okay, I can see that for some people, but for me, it is so much fun because here's how I look at it. You budget in order to reach your goals and dreams, right? Mm-hmm. So if you can look at budgeting as not a boring chore, but as a chance to dream and make plans to actually fulfill those dreams, then it is so much fun. I mean, I used to look at my budget probably daily when I was getting out of debt because I was so excited for the day that that would come and I could do something else. And I was looking at all the different things that I could do. So it actually became a lot of fun for me. And it's a heck of a lot better than how I used to just daydream, but didn't have any hope that my dreams could ever possibly come true.
I love diving into the intricacies of creating the budget. And so for me, it is fun for me because I try to look at where can I cut spending? Where can I add spending? Reallocating where my money is going into the different categories. And so for me, it's fun. But yeah, like you said, I guess some people could be like,
right. I mean, and you know, when you think about this, it's kind of a subjective opinion, right? Or question, because, you know, some people might think it's fun. Some people might think it's boring. It depends on what your definition of those things are. For me personally, I hate setting up my budget. And I, when I first started trying to set up my budget, I would always go over my different expenses or something month after month, and it drove me crazy, and I almost actually quit. But Bobby, kind of how you touched on this a little bit, maybe I was being a little bit too hard on myself. So once I started to loosen the purse strings a little bit and stop trying to, you know, budget every penny that I had, it became easier to track. And as far as it being fun, one of the best feelings I've ever had, and, you know, one of the greatest feelings I've had, like going over my finances, is when I see that net worth or net wealth start to go up. Yeah. And anytime you're paying down debt and you see that debt starting to decline, that is a great feeling.
Yeah.
I think anyone who's seeing that would definitely agree.
It feels so great. And, you know, then there's some of us who are just nerds. I mean, that's one of the reasons that I actually started coaching. I mean, I started the podcast to share information, but I started coaching because I went on Facebook and said, look, you know, I'm done with my budget. There's nothing else I can do right now. And I need more. Let me play with your numbers because I want more. So yeah, for me, it's just like, it's like a pastime. I don't know. I'm weird.
Myth number four, budgeting won't help me if I can't even pay my bills.
Yeah. You know, I can see how a lot of people could feel that way, but the truth is that budgeting is actually going to help you figure out why you can't pay your bills, because you start with your financial picture, and that's going to tell you exactly what you're currently spending your money on so that you know how much you're over or underspending and how much additional money you need to fill that gap. So seeing that gives you the power to change your circumstances. So this will help you find a way to be able to pay your bills.
Looking at the different categories, Tony and I are reading a book right now, Set for Life by Scott Trench. And we're taking a look at the four biggest categories that Americans spend the most money on. And you start looking at those, and it is your housing, it's your transportation, it's your food, and it's your insurances. And if you're able to try to figure out where your money's going in those categories and focus on a big one to see how can I reduce that? So maybe it's like, you know, you're paying $1,000 a month for rent and for your housing category, and you're writing it off like it's always going to be $1,000. So I don't need a budget anymore because it's not going to make sense for me. I can't even pay this already. But it's like, okay, how do we lower that housing? Can we move closer to our work, which is also going to reduce our transportation needs and gas? Do we need the $300,000 home? Could we go into a $200,000 or rent? Different things like that. So it's really cool that it's eye-opening to see what those categories are, how much money is going in there. And if it's at that max where you don't think that you can actually pay those bills, how can we reduce that and find alternative routes?
Yeah. And that's another reason why I love budgeting, because it's not just about the numbers. It's about the fact that it starts making you think that way, so you can be strategic and find other creative options.
If someone's, you know, living paycheck to paycheck and they're like, listen, I pay my bills every month, I don't have any extra money, there's no point for me to budget. This is the way I've been living for the past how many months or years even. I challenge you to go out and create a budget and start tracking your expenses and start figuring out where your money's going. And maybe, you know, try to find some areas where you can save a little bit of money, or check out those big four expenses that Rich mentioned. And it can really be life-changing if you can kind of change that spending behavior to save a little bit more of your income and put away for other opportunities.
Yeah, you know, I've really discovered that it seems like there is always a way. You know, I know you hear people say that, but honestly, I've read so much about them and tried so many different things, and at any income level, there's always a way. You just have to get creative and find it, and reach out and ask if you can't seem to find it yourself, because other people have great ideas.
And the extra pair of eyes, that's where Bobby comes in with the budget coach, is you find someone else to sort of help walk through those steps so we can figure out the ways to make the numbers work. Yeah. And last but not least, myth number five. So I don't even have a job, so I don't need a budget, right?
Yeah. Well, and you hear this, I mean, this could be typical among people who, you know, maybe have either lost their job, but especially for like kids that are just getting ready, just maybe coming out of college and or haven't gotten their first job yet. And what I say to those people is budgeting is going to tell you how much money you need from a job in order to live the life you want. And especially if you're just getting started, this gives you a chance to really think about, you know, what kind of area do you want to live in? What kind of, you know, do you want roommates or do you want to be by yourself? What kind of car do you want to drive? And put a number on all those things. Get those numbers together so that you know how much money you need from the job. That way you're set and you don't have to go backwards and try to get out of the paycheck to paycheck. You can be, you know, you can be ready and on a good track.
My favorite part of this episode is that we're diving into the five steps, the five-step budgeting process. So those are some of the myths that we sort of debriefed there. We talked about that. But now if you are at ground zero and you're thinking, how do I start a budget? I don't know where to begin. We're going to go ahead and walk you through that right now. Step number one, create your financial picture.
Well, your financial picture is, you know, like you said, it's the first step. And basically what it is, all of your income and all of your expenses. So you want to, let's just assume you're just using paper and pencil. So you want to write down your income, and then you want to write down all of your monthly expenses. We'll start with that. Once you have all of your monthly expenses written down, and you want to write down the description of that expense, is it, you know, gasoline, groceries, rent, utilities, whatever. And then after you write all those down and you have the dollar amount that you're spending per month and the due date, if there are bills, you need all that information for later. And then after you've done that, you want to actually look at the more irregular expenses, because that's what a lot of people forget about. That's what I forgot about, and it tripped me up for a long time when I started. And that's oil changes, or your annual car insurance, annual registration, your Amazon Prime membership, getting haircuts. You know, you don't do that every month, but you do it several times throughout the year. So you want to find the dollar amount for that, what you're spending per year, and then cut that into a monthly bill. Do the math to figure out how much monthly you would have to save, so that, you know, like if I get an oil change that's $60 every 3 months, I'll throw $20 a month into my budget so that I have that $60 every time it's ready. So once you have all of those figures, all of your expenses and all of your income, then you want to add up all of your expenses and divide it by your income. And now you know whether you have enough to cover what you need on a monthly basis. And if that number is positive, you're good to go. If it's negative, then you have a whole list of your expenses. You can decide where now you can cut, or if you need to add more income. So that gives you all the information in front of you to know exactly where you're at today and if you need to make some changes in your budget going forward.
And I would recommend diving into, if you have a credit card and you use it, use those credit card statements to figure out where some of those line items might be, or check into your debit account, anything where there could be those hidden subscriptions. Because I think that's a big thing in today's world, is we get hooked on these subscription fees and then we don't even realize it, that they're coming in. They're just getting withdrawn right from our account. And we don't have that bill that comes in the mail to actually see that. So really try to figure out where they're really taking your money from.
Definitely. And that'll give you a good idea too, going through your statements. Because if you don't know, like, you know, for groceries, how am I supposed to write down the amount for groceries? I don't know. So go back through your statements and see what you're spending. And a lot of people suggest to average that dollar amount out. But I actually say budget high, because you want, like, my electricity bill during the winter time could be $65, but during the summer it could be 130. So I budget 130 every month, because if it's that much, I'm going to have to pay it. Mm-hmm. So I don't want any surprises. And if it's not that much, then I can use that money for something else.
I think that's a great rule of thumb, is to always list your expenses on the higher end if you're unsure, or if they're volatile and can go up and down, because it's always better to have a little bit of extra money at the end of the month than to not have enough.
Step number two, budget the money that you have today.
So this is different, because I believe that you can't actually budget money that you don't have. You can plan for the money that's coming, but you can't actually budget it until it's in your account. So the actual budget is just a breakdown, a categorization of what's in your bank account today. All you do is go to your bank account, find the dollar amount that's in there, and you need to write out all of the different categories that you're going to budget that money into. But the good news is you already have a list of all of those, because you already listed out your expenses in the financial picture. So take all of those descriptions, all of those different expenses, bills, whatever they are, write them down on a separate clean sheet of paper with no dollar amount, just write out the categories. And now take the amount that's in your bank account and decide how much needs to go in each category between now and the next time you get paid. Because you know you've got another paycheck coming up, and we're going to plan for that separately. But today, how much do you need for groceries until you get paid? How much do you need for gasoline until you get paid? Are there bills that need to be paid before your next check? And go through that until you hit zero. I believe in zero-based budgeting. And so I would say go through that until you hit zero, even if some of that is going into your fund money or savings, whatever. Give every dollar a job.
All right. Now, step number three, create a spending plan.
Okay, so this is when you can plan for the money that's coming next. So we've already budgeted out the money that's in your bank account today. Now we're going to say, okay, my next check comes in 2 weeks, let's say, and I know that it's going to be this much. If you don't know exactly what your income, if your income fluctuates on this, I would estimate low. Because, you know, if you get a lower than expected paycheck, it's kind of a bummer to have to scramble around. So I always go low. So estimate what your paycheck is going to be. And then again, you want to, on another clean sheet of paper, this is your spending plan. So you want to take everything that is due between that paycheck and the next one. So let's say you get paid twice a month. Okay. And so I'll take my example. I get paid on the 1st and 15th. So for the paycheck that's coming on the 1st, I'm going to look and say, okay, what is on my list of expenses that needs to be paid between the 1st and the 15th? What are those bills? And also, what are those expenses? Because you're probably going to have groceries and gasoline on every one, but you're not going to have the bills to pay on every paycheck if you're getting paid more than once a month. So just focus on what needs to be spent between the 1st and the 15th. And that's how you're going to plan out your next paycheck. That's going to be the first spending plan that you have for the month. And again, you're going to go down and attach a dollar amount to each one until you get to zero. Even if you have savings on there, fun money, which you absolutely should have some fun money on there, in my opinion. That's what you want to do until you get to zero. Plan out everything that you need from your first paycheck to your second paycheck. And then, obviously, when you're done with that, then you would do your second paycheck. What needs to be paid between the 15th and the 31st? And those are going to look different. It sounds like a lot of work. And to get this started might be a little more work, but once you've got these two plans done, if you're getting paid regularly twice a month or once a month, whatever it is, it's going to be pretty easy to tweak them every month because your first paycheck is usually going to have to be spent on the same things. And your second paycheck is usually going to have to be spent on the same things because that's the way that your bills fall. So once you've got those two templates in place, you're in pretty good shape.
And that kind of outlines the importance of making sure you have all of your expenses listed and all of the due dates, right? So you know when I'm getting this paycheck for $1,000, if within the first 15 days of the month, my expenses are over that, what expenses do I need to push to the second half of this month or until I get my second check? And it can kind of sound like a pretty tasking thing to list all this out and try to calculate where your spending is going to be, when your checks are coming in and stuff like that. But as we mentioned, there is a lot of very easy apps, like financial apps you can download. You Need a Budget's one, Clarity Money's one, Personal Capital's one of my favorites, where you can just plug in, you know, you pretty much tell them, this is my monthly take-home pay. These are my expenses, and it will list and track most of that stuff for you automatically. Bobby, how you kind of mentioned in the beginning, when you're first setting up your budget, it could be a little bit more time consuming and a little bit more taxing. But what we're about to talk about, which is step four, which is monitoring your budget, that's when it becomes much easier and you can really find those big savings or ways to save or ways to track your spending.
Definitely, because once you get to that point, it can be a little harrowing to set all this stuff up. But once it's done, it's done. And like I said, you just have to make these little tweaks depending on what's going on, but it's not a lot of work. And then the monitoring is once you're at that step, then it's kind of like this cycle between monitoring and tracking. Because monitoring is basically, if you have budgeted the money that's in your account today, okay, now you decide you're going to go to the grocery store. Well, before you go, monitor your budget. Take a look and see how much is in your grocery category. That tells you how much you have to spend in that category. If you should go over, you're going to have to take that money from another category to cover it because that's just the way math works, right? And so if you go over that amount, maybe you can take from your gas category. But is that going to leave you short for the gasoline that you need? So that's a way that you can look ahead of time and plan out, is this spending really going to make sense? Can I maybe wait another week to go to the grocery store or just spend a little bit less? And you know ahead of time instead of finding out after the fact. That's what I love about monitoring. And like you said, when you're using an app like I use YNAB, and when you're using that, it's so easy to keep that up to date. And just take a quick look before you go and you're all good.
You know, this kind of all comes down to, you know, what are your needs and what are your wants, right? Because you can push a haircut to the next month, or you can push, you know, going out to the movies or out to the bars to the next month if you can't afford it. But, you know, gas for your car to get to work, you know, food on your table, those are things you probably don't want to ever push around too much, you know, on a monthly basis.
Yeah. And that's the beauty of a budget, because that's why I started doing it. It was just stressful. I can't keep track of all that in my head. I mean, but if I have a place I can just go look, hey, my life is much easier.
So that was we kind of touched on step four there, which is monitoring your budget. And step five here is track your spending.
So the difference between those two is that after you spend, then you need to track your spending, which is entering what you spent into your budget. So, okay, I had $200 to spend on groceries. I spent $100 at the store. I need to enter that into my budget so that I can see next time I go to monitor that I only have $100 left. So if you're not tracking, then you can't accurately monitor. And that's where this cycle comes in. If you want to stay on track, you've always got to have an up-to-date picture of what you're looking at. So the monitoring is important before you spend so that you don't get off track into the woods. And the tracking is important because that keeps you accurate so that you can monitor the next time.
Yeah. And I think there's kind of two ways to do this. One is by manually entering all of your spending, right? So we're tracking our spending here. After you go out and you make a purchase, after you pay a bill, you pull up your budget and you enter that amount that you spent. However, a lot of these apps nowadays have a kind of like an account aggregation data service. And I think YNAB offers this as well with their premium accounts. Where you can essentially link your checking accounts, link your car loans, your credit cards, pretty much any account you hold with an institution, you can link to these applications. It will automatically pull all of your transaction data, all of your account balances, and it makes it really easy just to go through and categorize each transaction.
So just as a recap, we started with step number one, create your financial picture. Number two, budget the money that you have today. Three, create a spending plan. Four, monitor your budget. And five, track your spending. If you are following along with us, you now have a budget you can go to. You could thank Bobby, and now you'll be set for life. You'll be good. And if you do need help with that, we also recommend contacting her as well. And we're going to go ahead and link that, the website to that, so you can have a personal budget coach for your convenience as well. So thank you for covering those five steps. We do have some additional questions. Well, one of the first additional questions that we have is how much should your emergency fund be? Now, there's some rough estimates out there, but in addition to that question too, I want to add, should this be a line item in that budget as well when you're saving for the emergency fund?
Definitely. I think that you should always have a line item for saving because it takes a while for, you know, especially if you don't have a lot of extra money after your bills and expenses, it takes a while to get there. So even if you can throw $5, you know, a month in there, always have a line item for it, definitely. And as far as how much you need to have in there, yeah, there's so many schools of thought on this. And, you know, I always hear that it's suggested, and I agree with this, 3 months of expenses if you're single or married with two incomes, because then, you know, if you get laid off, your husband or wife's income can cover that. 6 months if you're the sole income for your family. And so those are good rules of thumb. But I really believe that the correct amount is however much it takes to help you sleep at night, because that's just the most important thing. You know, for me, this is all about reducing stress, reducing financial stress. So if you need more or less than that to sleep at night, go with that. That's the best rule of thumb that I can possibly come up with.
With this emergency fund, it's okay if it's not earning you interest. I think a lot of people are like, I have, maybe it's $2,000, maybe it's $6,000 and it's sitting there, but I could be invested in this in the stock market, or I could be investing this as a down payment for a home where I could start getting rental income. So I think we need to also be comfortable with it just maybe earning 1% or less, because this is not for our investments. This emergency fund is for exactly that. It's for if we need new tires, and we don't have $500, well, now we could go right into our emergency fund. There it is. I don't have to worry about that paycheck coming in and budgeting now a new line expense for tires. I can pull from that. And then as the months go, I will slowly start to replenish that emergency fund back up there. Or it could be a medical expense. I just broke my ankle, so there are some medical bills coming in. So I have that emergency fund. I can start pulling from them. And that way I don't have to start using my paycheck and I don't have any of this money because I never budgeted for this. So I think it's okay if it's just sitting there earning 1%, and we don't have to worry about getting 8%, you know, a year on this and chasing those higher yields.
It absolutely shouldn't be earning interest unless it's, yeah, in a savings account, because this, like you said, this is the money that you need every day. I have heard people, and I love this analogy, they refer to it as insurance, okay? The money that you have for insurance, or that you're paying for insurance, consider it an insurance payment that you're making, you know, and you're not going to get interest on that, but it's going to come through for you when you need it. That emergency fund is your insurance policy.
Yeah. And the great thing about having an emergency fund is, you know, kind of how Bobby said, whenever you get comfortable with, okay, I have $6,000 saved, or however much money you need to save for your emergency fund, because it's built in your budget, once you reach that goal, you can just continue to save, keep that in your budget and continue to save for something else. And then, you know, your savings that you've been doing for however long can just go towards something that could become an investment or an asset to you.
Yeah, that's the beauty of these categories, is that for me, I like to separate them, because then I get a clear picture of how much I have here, but it's not going to affect anything over here. But, you know, it's just a category. You can move the money if you need it in some other area.
Another question that we have is, if you're sticking to a budget, At what time should you reevaluate that?
It depends on your situation. I think that you should definitely reevaluate anytime something changes for you. Like if you, you know, get a raise or, you know, you get added expenses and things like that. Those are always times to reevaluate. I don't think you necessarily need to reevaluate every month, but you do need to look. You just need to take a look at your spending plan each time before you get your paycheck, just to make sure that everything's covered. Nothing has, you know, come up, because there's always that thing that comes up like, oh, somebody's getting married, and so I'm going to have to either travel or buy them a gift or whatever. So there's always those little things coming up. So take a quick look every time, you know, when you're creating your new spending plan. But the big reevaluations, I don't think really need to be done unless something significant is changing. Once a year is a good time to look at your budget just to make sure that everything is still in line with what you want. And definitely when you get near the end of a goal, that's when I would really suggest reevaluating. Because for me, when I was getting out of debt, I had been so focused on that for so long that I woke up one day and went, I'm going to be out of debt soon. What do I do now? You know? And it was like, I was afraid that I was just going to start squandering my money, because where am I focusing it now? You know? So that's a really good time, is when you're getting close to the end of your goal, reevaluate and see what you want to tackle next.
I agree with that 100%. I mean, when, you know, it's good to set up your budget. And I love personally when I have my budget set up and I can go 6 months without anything changing, without any unexpected expenses coming up. That is amazing. I know I'm on track. I know my savings goals are on track, everything like that. But I think it's really important whenever you make a change to your financial picture or your financial life, whether you're moving, whether you're considering buying a new car, whether you're going to take out a loan or pay for school, those should really be the times that you're really taking a look at your budget. How will this work for me? Can I make sure that I can afford all of this? And am I spending within my means?
The last question that I have before we conclude this is, what is your personal favorite budgeting app or tool?
Oh, hands down, YNAB. There is nothing like it. For me, it just changed my life. I mean, I was looking for, because I had been using the cash envelope method, Dave Ramsey's cash envelope method, and it was working for me. I mean, I love the idea of it. It totally made things less stressful, but the problem was I kept leaving my cash at home, right? So I would get to the grocery store, go, so now I have to pay with my credit card and then go home, put the cash back into the bank, you know, and it was so much extra work and it was driving me nuts. So I actually went online to find a digital cash envelope system. And the one I found that worked the best for me was YNAB, because that's when I really learned about zero-based budgeting and also just categorizing your money and budgeting what you have today versus just planning for what you have, so that I always had that accurate picture. And I've never found one that's better in my eyes than YNAB. I love it. And it really helps you with credit card expenses so that you can use, I use my credit card for everything, but I do it in such a way through YNAB that it's like I'm using my bank account. So it's a beautiful thing.
We have a podcast episode. It's the 5 best budgeting apps for 2020. That is on it. It made our list. And we do have a link in our show notes too. So viewers could go ahead and click on that, and that will take you right to YNAB as well. So that is going to go ahead and conclude this segment of the show, but you are going to hang out with us and do a sweet beer review.
Woohoo! I'm looking forward to that.
Before we get into that, is there anything else you want to add about budgeting or any plugs for yourself?
I would just say that budgeting is personal. You know, different things work for different people. Think of it as a buffet. The budget buffet gives you a ton of different choices. There are tons of apps out there, tons of methods, tons of ways to save. And the buffet is there with all of these choices, but you get to decide what you put on your plate.
Once again, a big thank you, Bobby, for joining us today, and we'll go ahead and dive right into our beer review. Now, let's splash right into Rich and Tony's beer review. Don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, but most importantly, budgetsandbrews.com. Yes, we have a website. On that website, you'll be able to find podcasts, finance articles, beer reviews, and our merchandise store. If you don't want to pay for anything, we give away free apparel all the time on our Facebook page. So make sure you give that a like. Once again, our beer reviews mean nothing since we don't know what we're talking about. Please use our lack of knowledge for your entertainment. Tony, what's on tap this week?
For this week's beer, we'll be reviewing Dos Equis XX Lager Especial. We use a scale of 1 to 100, 1 being the worst beer we've ever tasted and 100 being the best.
And we're going to go ahead and start off with a description of the bottle. Recognizable. It is the green bottle. It's got the two red X's right in the middle. And that's it. I mean, there's really no other descriptors. I guess if you look really, really close in the middle, it looks like some type of something from like the pyramid days. Like, I don't know what those things are called. King Tut, Pharaoh?
Yeah.
A Pharaoh, something like that. Yeah, that's sort of what it looks like.
Crafted in Mexico.
It is a 4.2% alcohol, an American style lager. So we're going to go ahead and dive right into the first category, and this one's going to be out of 15. This is going to be the pour and head retention.
All right.
Crack these open, and I think we all have bottles.
Yes.
We have bottles here.
I do.
I thought they were twisties. They're not. Mine's not.
No.
Mine's not a twisty.
Not a twisty.
You always have to come prepared.
Pour here.
Get the pour going.
Mm-hmm.
Not bad.
Yeah, not bad at all. My pour for the pour and head retention out of 15... I'm going to give it a 7 because I don't have any head on my beer.
The pour went fine. It was smooth. It went fine. But I was very disappointed in the head retention. Yeah, there is some, but it was like a little less than an inch, and then it died down pretty quick. And by the time I'm talking now, it's almost non-existent. So I've had way better. So out of 15, I'm probably going to give that a 6.
Well, now, mine doesn't have a lot of head either, but I actually pour diagonally to stop that because I don't like head in mine. So, in my opinion, it's a 15 because, yeah, I love that it has no head.
I like to have a little bit of it and like to just see it. And I do the diagonal pour, and it just, and maybe it's because of media. Media always shows me like there's that beer and there's like that much head on the beer. And so like, I've been trained to think that that's a good beer, and that's why we don't know what we're doing.
Right,
we're just making guesses.
Cause I always picture like a half inch ahead to be the mark to go for. And sometimes I'm pouring and it's like 2 inches and I'm like, I don't even know how I'm going to get to this beer. And then sometimes, you know, you won't have any head at all. And I'm like, oh, you know, it's probably still perfectly fine and drinkable, but I always shoot for that half inch mark.
All right, next is going to be the appearance and color, and this is out of 10. And as I'm looking at this, it, to me, just looks like a typical beer. There's nothing, I mean, it's pretty clear, which is good. I see a handful of bubbles just sort of rising up. There's no bubbles sticking to the bottom of it, and it's not like a plethora of them at the top. And at this point, I have no head at all, but just... I don't know. I feel like it's missing something. I feel like there could be more movement, more dancing, or it sort of just looks weak. So I don't know. I'm going to give it, and it's a yellow. It's a golden yellow color, clear. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with another 6. Another 6.
6 out of 10. All right. I'm looking at this thing, and this is a crystal clear beer. I mean, you can see right through it. And one of the cool things that I think is like, you do get to see all those little micro bubbles action. Because it's such a clear beer, you can kind of see them float all the way up to the top. And I think that looks really cool. It's definitely on the lighter side. It's kind of like a golden yellow. I think it looks pretty appetizing. I will give this an 8 out of 10.
Yeah, I like the bubbles. I like the fact that it has, you can definitely see the bubbles coming up. And it is light, which I love light beers because I'm... just they taste better to me. I don't like dark beers at all. So the appearance kind of appeals to me, but yeah, I can see where it's just kind of a boring looking beer. I mean, the darker beers are more fun to look at, certainly. Yeah. So I'll give it a 7.
Moving on to the smell. So this is going to be out of 20.
Let's get in there. Ooh, you guys getting anything?
A little. Very
nice. I like this one. This one for me, it does not seem like it's hard to get. Sometimes I feel like I really got to stick my nose in the beer. You just put your nose to the tip of the glass and you can immediately smell that this is a beer. And you can smell a very clean kind of smell. It doesn't necessarily give off any distinct flavors, but it definitely smells like a nice beer. Smells appetizing. Out of 20, I'm going to give it a 17.
I am not too fond of the smell, but I also don't really smell that much. It's really hard for me to get a smell in there. I stuck my nose pretty deep in my glass, and I still did not come up anything spectacular or, you know, to write home about. I love that quote that you use. I'm using that in your last week's episode, yeah. Tony. Nothing to write home about. And then if I do get something, it smells as if my neighbors had 3 skunks in their backyard. but I smelt it from the my back porch. So it wasn't like it's my neighbor or it's my skunks in my yard, like that potent. It was like two doors down, maybe. Like they had three skunks, like a skunk nest. Like I smelt that. So a little skunky, but not super skunky. And then maybe a bad wash, like the glass was a little bit dirty. And that also could be because it is. I don't know. I'm not sure. I washed it. I took it out, but I'm smelling like a skunk in a non-washing glass. So out of 20, I'm going to give it a 9.
Okay. Well, you know, I had to sniff pretty deep into my glass too to smell anything. And maybe I'm a little stuffed up today. I don't know. But I didn't really smell a lot, which for me is good because I don't really like the smell of beer. And I think that's why I like Dos Equis so much, because the smell of, you know, if there's a really strong beer smell, I'm not into that. And this one doesn't have that. So I'm going to give it a 20.
All right. Did you get any of that skunkiness Rich was referencing? Now that he said something, I can kind of see that, you know, a little skunkiness, but not like in a beer way, not like isn't a skunk in your neighbor's yard.
Maybe.
Just two doors down.
Maybe a tiny bit.
Okay.
Well, all right. So our favorite part is going to be the taste, and this is going to be out of 30. So cheers.
Cheers. Mm-hmm. Oh, that is nice. I like that.
Oh, yeah. That's my kind of beer.
Yeah. I cheated a little bit, and I had a couple of these earlier in the week, and I knew I already liked them.
I was going to say before we recorded.
No. Earlier this week, cause I had to get a six-pack. But I love this beer. This beer seems like a light, very easy, drinkable beer. This would be a beer that I would like want to drink right after a workout. Like I'm out on the beach or something, sweating really hard, like playing volleyball. Oh man, let me grab a Dos Equis and just down this ice cold beer, like super refreshing. It doesn't have a whole lot of flavor, just tastes like a regular basic beer, but very drinkable. And because it doesn't have a super distinct flavor, I'm going to only give it a 22 out of 30, but I definitely like the taste.
I'm interested with this beer. I don't know. We have a weird relationship. I've tried it a couple times. I tasted it maybe three, and I just don't know. It's very confusing to me. It tastes like it's light. So that is for certain. It is a light beer. It's easygoing. I agree with you, Tony. Not after a workout, but maybe on the beach playing volleyball, hot summer day, I could have one of these. But there's some type of lingering taste. Maybe I'll reflect this more on the aftertaste, but it just doesn't hit me like a normal beer. Like, where are the hops? Like, it's missing the hops. And I feel like with a lager, it should have some type of that, like a Pilsner sort of taste. And instead, it's being replaced with what I could only imagine. Who's that character on Charlie Brown? Linus? Who? No. The one, he's the piano
Pig
player Ben. That has like the stink coming
Pig
off.
Pig Pen, right? Isn't it Pig
Is that
Pen?
His name? Pig Pen? Okay. It's like Pig. That. Like if Pig Pen, if that's accurate, I don't know his name. If he took a swim in the beer, like he swam around it and then he jumped out and he ran away and then I sipped it after that he got done swimming, that's sort of what it tastes like. And it's not awful, but it's, I don't think I would get it again. So for me, the taste out of 30, I'm going to give it a 12.
Wow. Okay. You are way more colorful than me. I love your descriptions. Well, I have to say I love the taste of this beer. I like when my beer doesn't really taste heavy. Mm-hmm. And so it's a really light flavor, and I like that. This is the only beer that, like you were saying, Tony, on a, you know, after a workout or on a hot summer day, you know, I always hear people talk about, you know, it's cold beer on a hot summer day. And before I tried Dos Equis, I was thinking, that's disgusting. I don't want a beer when mm-hmm. it's hot outside. Like, that does not appeal to me. But mm-hmm. this, the Dos Equis, yeah, definitely on a hot day. It's cool. It's crisp. I love it. It actually tastes refreshing to me. So I'm going to give it a 30.
But let's jump into the aftertaste. So I'm going to have to go in for another sip here. So I think the aftertaste kind of hangs around for a little bit. But because it's not a very bold flavor, you don't really notice it too much. It's pleasant. It's not like it doesn't give you like a bad taste in your mouth or anything. You do taste it a little bit once it goes down, but nothing crazy. Out of 25, I'm just going to give this a solid 15.
For my aftertaste, and I alluded to this a little bit before, I wasn't happy with it. I just wasn't happy with it. I'm going to say it tastes a little bit, not the taste, but the aftertaste is like a blue Play-Doh, like blue Play-Doh that's been sitting around and rolled up. It sort of just leaves like a weird palate taste in my mouth that sort of just foams over my tongue or something like that. I don't know. This is just really weird. I'm having a very hard time rating this beer, but it's not super awful where I wouldn't just stop drinking it. Right. So I'm going to give it a 13.
I'm wondering what you're eating over there. That you've got this Play-Doh.
I was going to say the same thing. Rich, when did you eat blue Play-Doh?
This is what I could imagine it tasting like. If I were to have blue Play-Doh, I feel like that's what it's... That's
okay.
So I love the aftertaste on this because there really isn't much of one, in my opinion. And, you know, I find a lot of beers that I drink have bad aftertaste. And so I keep drinking them so that I can get rid of the aftertaste, which causes me to get drunk pretty fast, which is not always a good idea. So I like Dos Equis because it has a light aftertaste. Don't have to worry about how much I'm drinking. And it's really nice. So I'm going to give it a 25.
All right, and then we'll move into the overall rankings. So out of 100, I'm going to go ahead and rank it a 46.
So my overall rating is going to be a 69 out of 100.
And I'm giving it a 97 out of 100.
Ooh, it's almost a perfect score.
It is. I think that's the highest score that we have on our reviews. And I definitely know what to get you for your birthday when that comes around. I'll be mailing you a 12-pack of Dos Equis.
Awesome. I would love it.
All right. Well, that wraps up episode number 20. And if you enjoyed listening, we ask that you give it a thumbs up, subscribe, or follow. And oh, yeah, please share this episode with family and friends if you found it beneficial. Also, don't forget to leave a review and comment on what topics you want us to cover for the upcoming weeks. That does it. See ya.